Welcome to the Misophonia Podcast. This is Season 3, Episode 8. My name is Adil Amar, and I have misophonia. Today, my conversation is with yet another Londoner, Claire. This is at least the third Londoner I've had on the show, leading me to believe that there is some sort of misophonia epidemic in the UK, whatever it is. This is yet another great chat, and I hope a great community can form and grow over there to bring misophones together. Claire is actually, in fact, on a mission, as she says, to find more misophones and spread the word. We talk about that, synesthesia, how miso has affected her family, which is, as you know, a common theme on this podcast, and living in a world designed for neurotypicals. Hey, speaking of community, I started an experiment this week by creating a group chat on Instagram, and it's quickly turned into a lively place for connecting and discussing all things miso. If you're interested in joining, just hit me up at Misophonia Podcast on Instagram, and I'll add you. You don't have to worry about participating all the time. You can just follow the conversation, and you can adjust your notifications so your phone doesn't ding all the time. It's a great place to hang, especially if you happen to be somewhere where you're being triggered. All right, now let's get right to my conversation with Claire. Welcome, Claire. Welcome to the show. Good to have you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So yeah, we were just saying how there's a bit of a time difference between us. Do you want to tell people where you are basically?
I'm in sunny London.
London, okay, yeah.
It's not sunny at the moment. It's pitch black.
Yeah. Well, it's dark here too. I've had a few people from London this year, and this somebody from Ireland actually yesterday, a couple days ago. So a lot of people in the UK area.
London, the misophonia seems to be quite London-centric at the moment.
Well, the people I've talked to, they've all said that they don't know anybody who's got it. I mean, maybe I should start there. Do you have a bit of a little miso group over there in London?
I'm on a mission to find my miso group. Oh. And actually, this is a first for me because this is the first time ever in 24 hours I've spoken to two people with misophonia. So I had a conversation with another woman last night, who's also in London. I feel like this is exciting. It's the one thing that makes me feel like I'm not going crazy.
Yeah. Did you say these 24 hours was the first time you've ever talked to anybody about misophonia, or it just happens to be two people in 24 hours?
Two people in 24 hours.
Yeah. So, and did that person have miso as well?
Yes, they do.
Okay. How did you bump into them then?
She's a friend of my boyfriend's.
Gotcha. So, okay.
Yeah.
And how did that come up? Did you see her just totally freak out at a trigger, and you're like, whoa, come here?
No, I mean, I've not. we just had a virtual call.
Gotcha.
In these funny times, so
yeah,
we actually met face to face, but. You know, where I've been sort of on a mission to understand it more, he's sort of been, you know, talking about it, and you know, she sort of mentioned and to him that she might have it, and he was like, oh yeah, you know, Claire has that. So that's how it came about, and where I've been sort of being a bit more vocal about it, also met, you know, there was a colleague and then a person I went to school with who I've known for like 20 years also has it. So yeah, like the more I've been speaking about it, the more people are like, oh, I have it too.
Okay, yeah. So you've really been kind of spreading the word or just kind of finding people. That's great. Yeah. So how long have you known that you've had it? Even probably before I had a name.
Actually, I've missed a very important person who also has it, which is my brother. So actually, I've spoken to three people in the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So how long have I had it? My first memory of being annoyed by noise was when I was about 6 or 7. I used to share a bedroom with my brother. You can imagine all those kind of like sleeping noises that sort of, you know, can drive you crazy.
I create them too. So is it the same brother you were sharing a room with that has misophonia as well?
I just have one sibling, one brother, and we both have it, yeah. So, you know, he'd be sleeping away. He's a younger brother. And I'd sort of wake up in the middle of the night just full of rage and, you know, wake him up in really mean ways to make the noises stop. So I'd like to issue a public apology to him. trauma I might have caused.
This is a somber and humbling moment. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. And did he exhibit symptoms of miso at the time too, or did his come a little later? Because he's a little younger, so
his actually came later. And you know, his first sounds, as far as I'm aware, were around the dinner table, and he used to accuse me of saying, like, you know, that sound thing, you know, because it, first of all, it was like sleeping noises, and then for me it was the dinner table sounds. And he used to say to me, Claire, you're the one who made me hate eating sounds. It's your fault.
I was going to ask if there was any of that kind of dynamic where there was some suspicion that it kind of like spread through you pointing it out so much. Because, you know, there's always this debate, is this like hereditary, or are you born with it? Do you acquire it? So I guess he seemed to think that he acquired it from you.
Yeah, like I awoke the misophonia within him.
Yeah. Interesting. And so your first trick was your brother. Did it start to expand then to, it sounds like it started to expand to the dinner table and kind of other family sounds?
Oh, yes. It's expanded. Old days where it was just one thing. And then it was, the dinner table sounds. I remember actually, it's funny with dinner table sounds. I remember having this childminder when I was young, and she always used to say, like, children should be seen, not heard, at the dinner table. And she always used to make this really clear point about this.
Like a Mary Poppins kind of, yeah.
Yeah, kind of. And she'd be, you know, they'd have this group of kids all around the dinner table munching away in her house after school. And she'd just obviously, and I was like, oh, maybe she had misophonia. And I think, or maybe she awoke the sort of eating sound misophonia within me. But then it was also, so it was eating, and then it was my brother eating first of all, and then it was my dad, and then it was sounds through walls, like muffled, like the radio in the bathroom, being in my bedroom, and then the TV, and then it was and then it's just kind of grown from there. And even like the misokinesia, which I mean, I didn't even know that was a thing. Is that even how you say it? And I was like,
kinesia. Yeah, right. Yeah, I didn't know about it until it's probably been like a year only. Yeah.
Yeah, same. And I thought, oh god, that's so mean that there's a movement one as well.
Right. Yeah, movement, visual. Yeah, it's kind of really attacks the senses. So it started to spread everywhere. Like a lot of people. How did it start to affect like school and friends?
You know what? I feel like I've got really lucky in that I don't have any memories of being triggered at school. So yeah. I think, I don't know how I've got out of that one.
I don't have that many either. So that's kind of lucky for us.
I've listened to people on this podcast who obviously, you know, they're studying at the moment and they're having a really tough time with it.
Yeah, yeah.
The only time I can really recall is when I was at university and everyone started like getting those white chunky MacBooks and sort of bringing them to lectures and the sort of typing, you know.
Oh, gotcha. Yep.
Feeling a bit awkward, but you know, I was just, it wasn't really a thing. But for me, it was more like triggers at home. Like when I was a teenager, it was that sort of, you know, with my dad, it would just sort of get worse and worse. Like everything he seemed to do would trigger me. And it's been interesting listening to his podcast and realizing that for a lot of other people, it's also the noises their dads make.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yours truly too. And how about your mom in this situation?
My mum, not so much. I mean, she does do things, you know, like eating sounds sometimes, maybe certain like intonation of the way she says things, but actually, not so much. But it's mostly my dad, which is such a shame. And I do sometimes wonder, like, what it would be like, you know, how our relationship would be if we could sort of, like, remove the misophonia, how it's
absolutely
impacted things.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of us think about that. That's where that kind of the shame and the guilt kind of comes in, thinking about all that stuff. And I'm sure we have, you know, we have memories of seeing our parents' reactions that it's not pleasant for them to kind of think about, you know, not them not understanding it. At least we kind of understand what's going on. It's kind of tough for other people.
I was thinking about this yesterday with the shame and the guilt and dealing with the reactions from people, because, you know, whenever I speak about it, or, you know, especially to them, it's, you know, people, it feels like a personal attack. It's like their ego sort of comes back and is like, oh, you know, well, just ignore it, or like, you know, I can't help it. And it's like, you know, you can't, well, it's just yeah, you're not the one who has to live with misophonia.
right. I guess from the other point of view, it's when you're in the middle of a trigger, it's like hard to think rationally. I mean, you don't really want to think rationally. It's just like, you don't even know what rational is. It's just like, it just feels like you're being attacked, like something's going to hurt you. And so when you choose, if you choose that point to kind of like start to think of words, then yeah, I guess it could definitely come off wrong to the other person who's not really hearing anything.
This is true. And even I was in the conversation I was having last night, was sort of talking about this and how it is actually quite hard to comprehend how another person might be feeling. Like, even someone with misophonia, like, where I've had conversations with people and different thing, like, they have different triggers to me, and right. So I think, oh, I don't understand how that can, like, I understand how that feels, but I can't understand being triggered by that sound. I mean, it doesn't bother me.
Glimmers
of where you don't feel like, wow, I don't know how that person feels, even though they have the same, even though we have the same experience, but we, you know, it's in relation to different things.
Right. And so how did you, what were some of the ways that you kind of acted out, you know, as you were growing up, obviously not understanding what it was, not having a name. Were you just kind of leaving situations? Were you kind of, you know, I don't know, throwing things, or how did it go?
Obviously with the early days with my brother, I'd sort of try.
Right, your brother was tortured. Yeah.
Stop the noise in the middle of the night. And I remember sort of a lot of screaming, you know, turn the noise down or turn that off, and, or, you know, being like, oh, can you just eat differently? You know, I'd be quite vocal about it, and then that would end in altercation. But where I've begun to understand it more, I've obviously got earplugs and earphones. And it's funny because even before I knew what misophonia was, like, I'd found all these coping strategies that actually everyone else has discovered too. And I was like, God, we're really smart people. Like, you know, we don't have any kind of medical guidance. We don't have any, like, no, it's such a mysterious, strange thing. And we've all figured out ways to cope. And they're all really, like, similar. And I was like, oh, that's really smart.
Yeah. Well, hell yeah, we are. We mentioned it on podcasts. I mean, we tend to be smart people. So what did you think it was? Like, would you just think that this person was... Did you just think that the world was full of people who were, like, just gross?
I think that all the time. I just think people are noisy. I sort of worry. I was like, no, I need to learn to love everybody. I mean, I'm a yoga teacher as well, so I like try and use my practice to be like, love everyone. But when you're sort of on the tube, or, you know, moving through your life, and there's just like noise everywhere, and everyone just feels so noisy, it's quite hard sometimes.
It feels like everyone has no self-awareness, and they're just kind of extremely selfish. And then when did you? You thought, and you still think, like we all think, everyone's just gross. When did you when did you find out that it was a real thing with a name? So
it was actually my brother who discovered it. I think it was like 6 or 7 years ago. And he was like, Claire, that thing, it's called misophonia. It's got a name. I was like, what? you know, instantly went onto Google and then found those like clickbaity articles that you often refer to, like hatred of sound and things like that. And I was like, I mean, at the time I was just like, wow, this is incredible. Like, it has a name. But it's still quite mysterious. Like, despite there's, you know, lots of people writing papers and doing science about it and things coming out, it still feels like a mystery and really hard to explain to people.
Yeah, it's still I struggle to kind of, I think everyone struggles to kind of explain exactly what's going on. We know that it's not just a psychological thing.
Because the sort of in the beginning it felt like it was a psychological thing. That was sort of like the first research I did. I was like, oh, this is psychological and blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, this new kind of a year ago, I went really into researching because I just thought, this is affecting me so much now. It's like stopping me from doing my job. And I need to educate myself on this and just own it, because if this is going to affect me for the rest of my life and it's holding me back, and I just can't have that. And then I found so many more things that it, you know, is actually how your brain is wired. I just thought, wow, it's not my fault, you know, it's just like, you're just born that way. And the things that came out for me were that it's genetic, and that, you know, Christopher and I have it, and also it's linked to synesthesia, which my brother and I both have too.
When I explain that, that is
there's lots of different types of synesthesia, and some sort of research even says that misophonia is like a type of synesthesia. It's the type that my brother and I have is where we see all of our numbers and letters in colors.
Gotcha. Okay. Yes. That's what that was. Right. Yeah. You're not the first people. One of the Johns that was on the podcast, I think it was late last year, also was talking about how he sees colors in, numbers and words and music.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Tell me more about some of the stuff that you're reading about researching.
I went really into that, and was thinking, you know, sort of trying to reframe the way that I felt about it. Like, there's this sense that you don't, like, you're sort of going through the world and it just nothing, it feels really overwhelming all the time, and the misophonia, it means that you're particularly sensitive. It's like your senses are always like super heightened,
right?
And maybe it's not that, you know, you're in the wrong feeling so sensitive, it's just the world hasn't been designed for sensitive people. And I just thought, you know, the only, you know, at work I'd sort of sit there and be so triggered by all of the noises in the office and think, you know, this office was never designed with like sensitivities in mind or sound. Like, it affects people so differently, and, you know, all of our spaces have never been, it's never been considered, like, how everyone is unique in the way they work and the way that they, you know, the environment they need to thrive, and you're just sort of shoved into this kind of like one size fits all way of working and doing things in life. And if it doesn't work for you, if you're not neurotypical, which is another new word that I've learned, you know, you kind of suffer. And you sort of was looking around and everyone could kind of focus and get on with their work, and I just felt like my brain was on fire.
I mean, I'm in tech, so like I've gone through years of the whole open office movement.
The worst.
And I remember my elementary school, which was built in the early 70s, back, you know, post hippie era, and it was a kind of an open office building. Open environment building, which I didn't have, you know, luckily I didn't have miso at that time, or I didn't notice it, but there was definitely a trend for a while where openness was, you know, touted as great. And I wouldn't want to be in a open elementary school right now, but I think now though, the, or just overall, the, at least before COVID, the trend was going back towards more diverse workspaces where there are maybe some open office some open spaces, some quick meeting rooms, just different ways to work. I think that's starting to be a trend where designers are getting more creative with spaces. I'm hoping that continues. Well, tell me about kind of where you're working. You said you're a teacher?
No, I work in publishing.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Okay, I misheard that.
So I sell books, basically, market books. And it's interesting, I work with a lot of books on like resilience and things like that. And I always sort of look at them and I think, oh, you know, if you want to meet someone resilient, you should meet someone with misophonia.
Mm-hmm. You know, I keep seeing like, you know, autism has got a lot of awareness, and you see a lot of concerts and especially geared towards events that are geared towards children. But also like I've seen grocery stores here have like basically hours that are specific hours of the week that are for people with sensory sensitivities, where they make things quieter, they turn the lights down a little bit. And I'm just wondering, I'm hoping that more organizations are starting to be more sensitive to people like us who are a little bit more neurodiverse, not just autism, but misophonia. Have you seen anything like that in London, like any kind of accommodations? What for people with for people with who are not neurotypical, as you say?
You know, when you were just saying about the supermarket thing, I was like, wow, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
that's so good.
Yeah. I'm thinking of maybe on the website having, I want to kind of like showcase that, like organizations that do this. So I might create like a list of these places.
Yes, please. Anyways, I just think it's just interesting to see what people are doing, because I honestly can't think of a single thing here in the UK. I can't think of anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Different countries have just different levels of awareness. And then after the awareness there's like what's the actual care level, and then what will the people actually do?
I'm in the kind of place where I feel like the only person who is gonna like speak up for me or make a difference is myself, like, and that's kind of where I was with work, and just thought, you know, this is affecting my performance, this is not healthy for me, like this is causing me so much stress on a daily basis being in this environment, and no one's going to sit there and be like, oh Claire, can I help you, or like, you know,
right,
should I talk to someone for you? I was like, the only person who's going to do that for myself is me. So I sort of like did loads of research, made a bit of a case, and got the outcome that I needed, because you know, the company I work for is really compassionate and they're kind of set up to do that. But I know that, you know, now I've done that once, like, you know, in the future, if I sort of find myself in that position again, I would feel more confident about just being like, look, I've got this thing called misophonia, and I need some equipment, or, you know, I need to sit somewhere special or be somewhere different so I can actually do my job. And this is just my little suitcase of baggage that I come with. So like it or lump it, really.
Do you want to share a little bit of like how you went about that? Because I'm sure some people are like, at an abstract level, they're probably like, I feel like I should do something like that. But how did you just research over like, one night? Or spend a few days, put something together, call a meeting? Like, how did you go about doing that?
Well, I sort of started researching just almost to like affirm the fact that misophonia was definitely 100% real, and, you know, get really up to speed on what was happening. So I don't know how long I spent researching, maybe just like a couple of weeks. And then sort of that built up and helped me build up enough courage to go to the HR team and just have a conversation.
So you didn't tell your boss necessarily, you just kind of went to the company's HR.
Yeah, well, I was going to tell my boss, but I just wanted to like speak to someone, you know, neutral, yeah. see what could be done. And then I had a conversation with my boss, who's, you know, lovely and really understanding. And then I had an appointment with a kind of occupational health person.
Did they set that up?
Yeah, they set that up for me. And, you know, I wasn't expecting him to sort of like know what misophonia was, but he was very understanding and, you know, listened. And he kind of wrote some recommendations, sort of, you know, based on what I said, that was then communicated back to the company. And then.
So the recommendations like, here's a glass box that Claire needs to be in at all times.
Yeah, soundproof glass box. I wish. And then he recommended I go and see my GP, and that was really scary. I don't know why.
Oh, wow.
I sort of plucked the courage up to make an appointment and went along and sort of was like, oh, I think I have this thing. In fact, I know I have this thing. I didn't know what to expect. I was kind of the best case scenario has been, oh yeah, she would have said, I know, I totally know what that is. And yes, I can sort of refer you maybe to an audiologist. We can, you know, I don't know what I was hoping for, but anyway, she just recommended that I take like anti-depression, anti-anxiety medication, which, you know, I've been offered many, many times. So I'm just like, no, this is not the solution.
Right.
So I left that appointment feeling pretty like kind of not hopeless, like just a bit like, oh, for goodness sake, like, you know, if a medical part, like a doctor's just like, doesn't even get it. Like, you know, that just proves the point that, you know, you just have to manage it yourself. And sometimes you do feel really alone with it. You just think this is just, you know, everyone else is just sort of getting on with things. I mean, everyone has their stuff. Like, you know, I don't know what everyone else is going through as well. Like, everyone has their things, but, you know, misophonia really does, you know, dictate a lot of my life. And I try not to let it, but, you know, a tube journey for me where I'm surrounded by triggers is going to be very different for someone who doesn't have misophonia.
Right. Yep. The tube and subway. All you can do is really just close your eyes and put on some headphones.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Have my little techniques. I'll turn my body away from whatever it is. It's always quite a lot of mesokinesia on the tube with like the gum chewing. Though now people have to wear masks. Don't see that anymore.
Right. Yes. That should probably be permanent for some people.
Yeah, I agree with that. But obviously since COVID, we've been working from home. So, you know, that was such a...
How's that working out? Yeah.
At the beginning, it's sort of like a double-edged sword, really. Because in the beginning, I was like, oh my gosh, like, you know, this is so wonderful. Like, I don't have to worry about being triggered at work anymore. Even though the kind of the adjustments really like just helped so much, like it just made it's like night and day, just made it manageable. Working from home, it was just such a relief in the beginning. But I am really missing the human connection, even though I don't like being in an office. But I still find
you miss the human connection, even though you don't like to be around certain humans when they're doing certain human things.
It's like you can't win. but there's still triggers at home, because obviously I'm living with my parents at the moment. So you know, hearing my dad on the phone upstairs while working from home, things like that.
Right. And again, like on the tube, I guess is your tool, or is your tool to kind of just put on some headphones, or do you take your laptop outside or something?
I have different headphones for different occasions. So you know, sound cancelling ones are sort of the ones when I'm feeling really triggered, and then I have my normal like iPhone ones where, you know, I just want. And it's just kind of normal, and then
some more cash.
And then I have these incredible, because sometimes actually it's a bit much having music going on and you just want some peace and quiet. So I have these incredible earplugs that I get from like a UK pharmacy called Boots. They're these like little wax earplugs. Yeah. And they just, it's like turning your ears off. They're so good and they're really cheap as well. So I stock up on like 10 boxes of them at a time.
And is this like the stock Boots earplugs or is this a special brand?
No, they're just like own brand. They're called Muffles Wax Earplugs, if anyone's interested. And they're just my favorite earplugs ever. And you put them in and the whole world sort of goes quiet. Yeah. It's so nice.
Yeah.
And then I have a speaker, like a Bluetooth speaker, if I want some sort of background noise. So yeah, I have lots of different things that I do.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, so yeah, if you don't want to necessarily have the music right in your ears, I never thought about the earplugs combo with some speakers just playing some background music as or even white noise or something. That would be an interesting combination if you don't really care about sometimes what you're listening to.
It's really bad. I'll put the earplugs in and then sound cancelling headphones over the top.
Yeah, that's bad. But yes, necessary. I totally get that. I totally get that. And then you put the death metal in the noise cancelling headphones blasting over the earplugs. That's like level 11. Yeah. Right. Then you don't hear the fire in there and you know coming in the kitchen or anything. So.
That was what we were talking yesterday when I was having this conversation, and you were saying, you know, it'd be so nice when you're old and you start losing your hearing.
Right.
To take the edge off all the triggers. I was like, oh, that'll be the day. Because at the moment, you know, I feel like I can hear everything. My dad always says, like, you've got ears like a bat. Because I can hear everything. And I see everything. I hear everything. And I was thinking the other day, like, you know, back in the day where people used to live, you know, in little communities and villages, and maybe they needed, like, a lookout person. If you had someone with misophonia in your community, you would have been fine because they would have heard everything, seen anything, like any danger.
Yeah.
Like you guys could all get out of there and, you know, you'd be like the, you know, the chosen person because,
right.
You know,
everyone. The hypersensitive, would, yeah.
Yeah, you'll be like the, I don't want to say, like, you know, you'd be like the wise old, like, you know, person who can hear and see everything.
I'm thinking the village lunatic where if they hear something weird, they'll be seeing me like screaming like crazy and then that'll be your alarm.
Or the village lunatic. I don't like that.
But yeah, that's a good point about when you're getting old. I mean, losing your hearing, I mean, who cares? Like you're probably retired. It's not like you need to listen to your boss or anything. You just need your sight so you can just sit on a beach and look at the ocean. And then you're listening to white noise anyway.
Exactly.
So, kind of all works out. That's kind of like having earplugs in the speakers. It's like losing your hearing with an ocean next to you. So
basically, and it's like, you know, I think because my hearing is so feels so good anyway. I mean, even though it was to like lose it a bit when I'm older, like it'd probably just be at a normal level, to be honest.
Right. So you're not living with your partner, your boyfriend, right?
Not yet. I mean, moving in together in like a couple of weeks. And this is actually causing me some misophonia issues. Yeah, anxiety. Oh, okay. Because it's a kind of old big house. It's been separated into five flats. So it already feels like a little bit claustrophobic. Everyone's sort of on top of each other. And because it's an old building, the walls and the ceilings are just paper thin. And on the occasions where I visited the place, you know, you can hear neighbours and I'm thinking, oh, and sometimes it's really quiet actually. Like when it's quiet, it is silent. But then when someone's home, you know, you do hear things. And at the moment, the place doesn't have any furniture in it or anything. So there's nothing to absorb the noise. But,
right.
You know,
that'll help, obviously. But
It's keeping me up at night. I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm not. It's sad because I feel like, you know, this is a really exciting moment.
Yeah.
That we're sort of moving in together and we're doing the place up and making it how we want it. It's such a great opportunity and something I've never done before. And then it's like, I can't get excited about it because I'm just dreading, thinking, is this space going to make me ill? Because obviously, it's not just a living space. I'm going to be there all day working 5 days a week. And yes, I'm going to be there a lot. And, you know, are these neighbors going to make my life hell? Who knows?
Have you, what have your experiences in other places? Have you lived in other places outside your parents' house?
Yeah, so I used to live in a flat, which at the time I didn't appreciate because it was like a new build and it was completely soundproof. And I just think...
Yeah, like all concrete and stuff.
Yeah, like really solid. Yeah. And I didn't appreciate at the time how amazing that was. I mean, you shut the door and it was like the whole world disappeared.
Yeah.
And I think this... you know, this new place, I'm thinking, I don't think this is kind of the space that I need to feel happy. I'm not in there yet. I don't know how it's going to work out and, you know, can always move. But, you know, my ideal house at this point, I think, you know, when you drive through the countryside and maybe you look up into a hill and there's just this little speck of a house in the middle of the mountain or something surrounded by nothing.
I almost get into a car accident because I'm like, oh, you know, can't take my eyes off it. That is pretty ideal. I mean, that's perfect for when you're old and can't hear anything as well. It's just not really going anywhere. That's great, but concrete places look great. But, you know, when you move in, you'll fill it up with stuff. You'll also get to know kind of the routines of your neighbors and whatnot. So I think, I think you'll adjust.
It's getting that definitely balance between not letting it dictate your life and, you know, rule what you do and where you live and things, but also making sure that you feel happy and safe where you're living. And I agree, when you get to know people, it almost takes a sting out of it. So I've tried to in my head, I'm sort of making a bit of a Misophonia action plan. So, you know, getting to know my neighbors. So I'm not just oh, that person next door is just driving me crazy again. I can be so-and-so's just got some friends over and they're having a nice time. Time, and I'll put my earplugs in. So I think it does take the sting out of it when you, you know, become friendly with whoever's, you know,
become friendly and start to know, you know, if you know when friends are coming over in advance, it helps to kind of prepare your mind.
Exactly.
What sucks is if you're coming home stressed from work and then you walk into a cacophony of sounds, then it's just a disaster.
Oh yeah, that is the worst. At the moment, you know, if I come home, put the key through the door and I can already hear the radio's on.
Right.
It just is the worst way to sort of come into the house. You just think, oh no, walking into this.
Yeah, and you turn around, at least you're in London, you go to a London pub and hang out there for a while and then come home.
What was I gonna say? But yeah, with my little Misophonia action plan, I'm sort of gonna almost type it up and stick it on the wall, so I know that if I am sort of having a moment to check the action plan, and then I might even need to check it, but it's just knowing that it's there, so I'll have all the things that I know make me feel good, sensory experiences that make me feel calm, having a warm bath or getting a hot water bottle or going for a nice walk outside in the fresh air, things like that. And then I'll have I'm gonna get a white noise machine and I'm making some playlists that I've heard people on the show talk about making playlists and making sure the songs are sort of songs that start straight away. There's no kind of quiet intro and things like that. And also, having my earplugs nearby. And so I know I have lots of strategies. So I think there's often with Misophonia, there's a pause between when you're triggered and doing something about it. Cause you sort of, there's mm-hmm. a standoff almost oh, I'm not moving, or I'm not going to put my headphones in. They should just be quiet, or they should stop doing what they're doing. And it's,
exactly.
It's always me who has to change what I'm doing. And then it's just kind of accepting and then by the time you actually do some action and do something about it, you're so wound up. So it's just kind of, just accepting it and being right, headphones in.
Yeah, no, I mean, a lot of things, that sounds like a great action plan, or just kind of a list of things we all know help, but like you said, in the moment, we just want to get the F out of there. Or we just kind of, like a deer in the headlights, we just kind of like don't know what to do. And we're just assuming that the rest of the world needs to just get their shit together and shut up. So it's good to have like a nice list on the fridge or wherever it is on your phone.
Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. How about your brother? Do you talk to him about a lot of this stuff? Like, this is for the family Misophonia action plan, or is he kind of more on his own?
It's interesting because he's more like, he's on, even though we both share it, like, you know, he's sort of on his own. Like, I think he has different triggers, or he just deals, like, we're quite different people. Like, he deals with things in very different ways to me. Yeah. So we don't talk about it too much. But also I think, you know, because he's my brother, I think, oh, like, you know, it's that expectation that he's going to, like, have exactly the same experience as me and deal with things in the same way. So when I find out that he doesn't, that makes me kind of upset. But, you know, it's like he has his own unique experience with it. And the one thing we do sort of bond over is like eating sounds at the table. You know, early in lockdown, we were sort of, there was like a thing around like, we're going to have meals all together as a family.
Oh, so he's living with you guys too.
Yeah, he's here too. Okay. And so we'd sort of like, you know, lock eyes across, you know, and be like, oh God. and then we sort of introduce a rule of like always having the radio on. And then sort of, yeah, gradually the meals are sort of like faded out. Kind of a relief. But it does upset my mum. She's like, well, you know, I wish that we could all eat together as a family. I was like, you know, this is like this vision of, from society that, like, you know, it's this wholesome thing to have like family meals and sit around the table and share food together, which is like a lovely thing to do. But it just doesn't work for me.
No.
So I was like, I said, like, couldn't we just go for like a nice walk instead? That could be our, like, you know, alternative to a family meal. But there's this, you know, idea that, you know, it's nice to sit around together, but someone with misophonia is not so
easy. Why would you make sacred, why do people make sacred the as a time to talk, the time when there's a bunch of stuff in your mouth? That just seems odd. get it over with, then you can go talk. That's fine.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you guys don't talk about it. I mean, I guess you must have holidays and stuff, right? With even more extended family. Does that get even that much worse?
Well, they live kind of far away, so we don't...
Okay, you don't have a lot of...
I'm very close to them, and, you know, so we do have, you know, when we, you know, they, yeah, I mean, there's people in my extended family who definitely trigger me. But because I don't see them too often, it's sort of manageable, and I know, you know, I can anticipate it and prepare mentally. But yeah, Christmas, you know, I hear you talk about you know, Thanksgiving and that kind of dread, so I definitely have that about Christmas dinner, things like that. Everyone's sort of talking about, oh, it's so exciting to have this like lovely meal. I'm just like, no.
I mean, I guess it's coming up, we're already in October, so something people should be, well, are, I'm sure, are thinking about. Well, we're, I mean, so we should probably kind of start to, we've already talked for like a good 45, 50 minutes or so. I'm just curious, like, you know, I know you've done a lot of research, you know, you've had experiences at work and you've got, you know, action plan stuff, and you listen to the podcast. Is there kind of anything you kind of want to tell people about me, so about your experiences, or maybe just make a call out to folks in the UK to kind of get together with you, maybe.
I'd love to meet more people who, well, like, you know, chat to more people who have it, because I find that is, you know, in the sort of moments where I felt really helpless, that is the most soothing thing, like, where, you know, I've had recently, like, you know, I tuned into an episode of the podcast when I was feeling like that, and it was just like it just felt like a balm, like it just felt, you know, really soothing, and the thing, you know, it helped to really calm me down and remind me that it's not, you know, it's not my fault, it's not your fault, it is what it is, and you know,
and you're not alone.
Yeah, not alone. And you know, it's is ultimately like just looking after yourself really carefully. You know, I have to sort of, I'm really aware of what I eat, like not eating anything like too, you know, how much I sleep, like not drinking too much alcohol, like things that can kind of overstimulate my system anyway. Yeah, trying to live kind of like a healthy life so I can sort of stay balanced and manage those triggers better, even though it's not always easy. But what else? Yeah, I just think accepting it really.
Yeah.
Which can feel hard sometimes, but you know, I think if someone was to say, would you take away, like, okay, a genie came along and was like, right, I'll give you a wish, like, it, just say the word and I will get rid of your misophonia, I'd probably say no.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I can understand saying no, but I think I would say yes. I would, knowing though that I would be a different person, but
well, that's the thing for me, because I feel like it would make me a different person.
And I think I'm awesome. you know, I know you are awesome too. So yeah, that would be the one thing. But I think there are many possibilities of awesomeness for people with misophonia.
I wouldn't mind just like, I would say, well, maybe could you just tone the triggers down, like, you know, reduce the,
yeah,
you know, make it less impactful and less painful to hear them. But you know, maybe but I wouldn't want to lose the kind of the synesthesia, like being able to see the colors, or like, you know, feeling, having all those sensitivities. Like, I think the world really needs people who can like feel things, who are self-aware, who can see things that others can't. And you know, I wouldn't want to sort of get rid of that ability that, you know, allows me to do that really. I keep thinking, well, maybe it's like a gift, maybe, I don't know.
Has it helped you has it helped you in any kind of situations, that ability to see colors, like creatively or in some other, do you feel like it's helped you in your work in publishing?
Definitely. My thing is writing.
Yeah.
And I think it impacts the way that I string words together. I write a lot of poems. You know, I've always, you know, music is such a joy for me, like, you know, making music. Definitely. And it also
do you have this stuff posted anywhere, like your poetry or your music or anything? Or
not really, or no? Like, I keep it very private, but you know, the music was more something I used to do when I was sort of in my early 20s, like throughout school, things like that. So, but I just remember it, you know, my brain really liked music, you know, reading music, making music, you know, really like, it was a real pleasure for me. But yeah, I get it through now, like through the way that I can like string words together. And it also kind of changes the way that I feel about people. Like if someone's name has a particular like color combination, like that will kind of reflect on how I feel about them and stuff. But anyway, I sort of digress.
No. I mean, this is interesting.
I would just say, stay really positive about it and embrace it, and as part of you, and like, you know, just you know, make a little action plan.
Yeah, that's a great. I don't know if anyone, I haven't heard anyone put it that way, like an action plan, which is basically a list of kind of having a list of go-tos, like your top kind of coping mechanisms always there, right in front of you, so you don't have to think about it.
I mean, I like to think I'm quite a positive person, so I try not to sort of get to, you know, stop it from, let it stop it, let it stop. Hard to walk, it's so early in the morning, I'm like, my brain's like closing down. But yeah, just I try not to let it stop me from doing things and living the life that I want to, basically.
Well, that's great. Many positive notes there. Maybe we should end it on that. Yeah, a lot of great tips there. And yeah, I'm glad you're able to talk about this more. And it's good to have you find more people in the UK. It seemed like from the people I was talking to in the past, there wasn't a lot of awareness. So it's good to see somebody who's actually trying to do the research and reach more people. So yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Thanks for coming on, Claire.
Well, it's been a real pleasure to share all this stuff. I feel like, you know, probably could do another hour of like talking about it. I feel like it's just the surface.
I was thinking about that when you said maybe a year after you move in to your place, we'll do like a little retrospective and see how the new
flat is working out for you. Definitely. I'll let you know how the action plan's holding up. Might have ripped it up by that point.
Right.
Or no, I hope not.
I think you'll just add to it. I mean, you're quite a good at research and thinking of new ideas. So I'm sure you'll just add to it, and it'll all work out. So
exactly, yeah, it will work out. It'll be fine.
Great.
She says.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, Claire.
Thank you. It's a pleasure talking.
Thank you, Claire. Another great conversation. If you're enjoying the shows, please consider hitting the 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Otherwise, hit me up on Instagram or Facebook, Misophonia Podcast, or Twitter, Misophonia Show. If you are on Instagram and want to be in that Misophonia Podcast group chat, just DM me. Music, as always, is by Moby. And until next week, wishing you peace and quiet.